Welcome everyone to tonight's episode of Pivotal Change. We've got an exciting lineup. We're going to be talking a whole lot about development and relationships and learning new things tonight. This is a show that is all about leadership, entrepreneurship, just being business-minded, or anybody that wants to have or grow their influence. This is the spot for you. I'm Ryan Kahn with CS Business Consulting. We have a good set of guests for us tonight. My first guest is Noah Davis. He is the son of missionaries, and Noah is the youth and family missionary at the Central Church of Christ in Paducah and a very good friend of mine. He's very unique because he was born in Africa and spent a whole bunch of his formative years in that cultural environment before learning the real Western worldview. He has an incredible spiritual journey, and he has been a leader from a very young age, working with people literally all over the world to learn more about themselves, deeper spiritual life, and bring them to Christ. So Noah, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, I enjoy having you on here. And of course, you and I've had dozens of good discussions throughout life. And I'm going to stay kind of in your realm of expertise, talking about youth and young adults. And one of the things that I want to learn about is you deal with people all over the spectrum on knowledge and depth and understanding and, of course, the intellectual side of knowing the Bible and the relationship side of knowing themselves and Jesus. So I want to ask you about those different areas of people. So when you meet a young person, and let's say you have somebody that knows nothing about the Bible or Jesus, this can go for us in business as well. You know, somebody that knows nothing about our industry, but they maybe have some character that we like and we want to draw them in. What are some of the key approaches that you use to build trust and open some meaningful conversations with them?
Yeah. When you're dealing with somebody who doesn't know anything about what you are talking to them about or what you're trying to kind of pull them into, business, church, anything, you have to start with some level of education, right? They got to know something so that y'all can have a little bit of common ground to talk about. But really what I have found drives those conversations in a more productive way is finding what they care about, what drives their heart, where are their passions, and then finding the kind of the intersection of where their passions line up with whatever you're talking about. So in my world, what I deal with kind of day in, day out, we're talking about youth and spiritual development. A lot of youth could care less about their spiritual development, which is, you know, that's just where they're at. But what do you care about? If I can find and figure what you care about, figure out what you care about, figure out where your heart lies, what really motivates you to get up every day, what motivates you to want to do something. Okay, now we can go somewhere. Maybe it's people where your passion are at. Well, I got a whole church family of people. What if you just come along, and I'm not even going to mention God, but you come and be a part of a event with people. And then we can have a conversation about what does it mean to be a family? What does it mean to be the family of God? Of course, that principle can apply in a business world as well. But when you got somebody who doesn't know anything, finding what they love, where their heart is, can then generate some conversations about maybe where you want to go, and letting them know more about something. And it's not just information at that point. It's actually that you start to care about it, about the information.
I like that a lot. I like that you throw about learning about them. You're going to learn about the other person before you try to make them learn about something else. Going into what do they care about is so important, because most hallmarks of like really profound leaders, the subordinates, the people that follow them, think that they genuinely care because they actually do. So I think it's so important that you establish that you care for them and you want to know what they're interested in, what they're motivated or passionate about, and then that's the doorway where you open it and bring them in. And I really like that a lot. You know, I generally try to prepare some responses prior to the show, like any decent prepared host. So here's a behind the scenes moment. But something that just popped into my head is that what you're saying almost sounds like a career fair to me. You know, you have a career for like a high school, and you're trying to say, what the heck are these kids even interested? What are they going to do with the rest of their lives? And a lot of these kids will shrug and say, I don't know what I want to do. Well, here's a list of everything that's at the career fair, or the list of all of the majors that are in the high school education or college program. And they say, well, that one kind of sounds cool. That one kind of sounds cool. And they highlight a couple. Then they go visit the booth. You bring them in to say, hey, look at everything the church has to offer. Look at everything the career fair has to offer. And here's some interesting points that you might be able to jump into, you may be able to grab a hold of, and boom, now the passion is ignited and you can really plug them into something. They can start learning and growing in Jesus or a business. So that just really popped in my head, and the way you described it made me think of learning to introduce people to the job fair of what church and Christ could have to offer.
Yeah, and the Bible talks about that too, that we've all got different talents and abilities and gifts. And the church is designed in a way that incorporates all of those. There is no gift that can't be utilized in the church. It's the way God literally created people and designed his family to work. And I don't think it's a coincidence that businesses tend to do better when they utilize the strengths of their people instead of trying to make everyone fit one mold. Because that's the way God designed his family. And that, of course, applies to a lot of other parts. And so if you can figure out what their interests are, what their passions are, what their talents are, and then you start connecting that with maybe something they have no idea what it is or know nothing about it, you can actually go a lot further with that approach.
So second person that I think of that we experience a lot is now we have some younger people that come in. They're like, well, I know something about Jesus. I know something about the church. And they're like, oh yeah, up until I was 8 years old, I went to this church and then we moved, or, you know, my parents got divorced, so we stopped going to church. So maybe they've got 4, 5, 10 years of the really young years of familiarity, and they've heard the Bible stories, and, you know, they know Noah and Moses and some of the, what I would say, basics. But they know something about the faith, but they don't understand the core. How do you start a relationship and a teaching endeavor with people in that category?
Well, that's a great place to be if you know a little bit, but you're still wanting to know more. I mean, the best students are the ones who want to learn and who realize that there's still some gaps that they need to figure out. And so encouraging that journey of questions and it may be doubt. I always tell people doubt is not a bad thing. Doubt that you don't deal with, that's a bad thing. But doubt itself is actually a really good thing. It's what prompts us to ask good questions. It's what prompts us to grow. It's what prompts us to actually become better than we were the day before. It's the people that are very, very comfortable and who maybe don't doubt at all that typically are the ones that are pretty stagnant. And so those students who know something a little bit, but are not quite there, don't feel like they're there yet, feel like there's more to learn, that's actually the best place to be. In a way, it's kind of the place that you always are your whole life. Obviously you grow, but when you get to the point that you think you know everything, no, that's a bad place to be.
Okay, well, let's talk about those people.
Encouraging that growth is important.
Yeah, that's another category of people. So I'll switch the order I was going to go in. But then we get people that say, oh, I already know this. I've already read the Bible front to back. I already do this. And they start even quoting verses and things like that. And they think that they know about the church and about Jesus, but there's a lot of misconceptions. For people that study and take themselves humbly but seriously, you can hear that, man, there's a lot of fallacies in here. There's a lot of secular opinion seeping in. You don't probably know what you think you know. It's a little bit more delicate, but how do you handle a relationship building and a teaching endeavor with people with that mindset?
Grace and patience, because those are difficult people. People who think they know everything obviously are wrong, because nobody does. So you can only do so much with them. It takes a moment of humility or even humiliation sometimes to break through that for people. There have been individuals who you know are great people, but there's just an arrogance and a perception of they are the source of all knowledge, And I've thought to myself before, man, if you would just have a moment where, or an experience or an event that just humbles you, and I don't want it to be tragic, but just something that kind of knocks you off your feet, you know,
Just tough enough.
that would be so good for you because then we could actually get somewhere. Because right now, there is nothing I'm going to say that's going to break through that.
I agree with that. You know, they need a gut check at some point, something that knocks them on their heels. You don't want to knock them flat because then they're down and out and they're probably never coming back. And like, you don't want to embarrass them. But I think, you know, also I try to take an endeavor approach to say, well, let's discover this together. Like, hey, maybe I need to learn too. And then I really like asking questions and follow-up questions and letting them look it up, research, and lead them to the answer without just lecturing them to the answer. You know, but I really like what you're saying about that approach that you have. So got a real quick short turnaround, but luckily it's the easiest category. You have people that are healthy, they mature, they know a whole lot, they're invested, they come into a relationship, maybe they just had a job change, they're good, healthy, understanding, they come to the congregation, and how do you establish a relationship and keep them moving forward and just keep them from getting stagnant, I guess, because they already know a healthy amount and they're already looking to continue learning.
Yeah, I mean, in the life of a congregation, those are the people that you just let them work. You just let them do their thing. And you say, I'm here to work alongside you, and you're actually going to better me. And I hope that I better you too, because we're a team. And so that's where congregations really thrive. That's where businesses really thrive, when you've got
Absolutely.
people who are all working together on the same page. And no, you're not perfect, but you're in this thing together, and you're going to be there for each other. There's a spirit of humility and teamwork and drive, and that's where things really happen.
That's perfect. A spirit of humility and teamwork and drive forward. That's a perfect place to pause, cut to commercial break. So everybody sit tight, keep your pen and paper handy. We'll be right back with more Noah Davis right after this. Welcome back to More Pivotal Change. Now, I know you are loving what you're watching, so I want to let you know that if you ever miss an episode, you actually don't have to miss a moment of Pivotal Change because your favorite shows are all live on Now Media TV, like live on demand. You can get them anytime, anywhere. You can download free apps, the Now Media TV app. It's on Roku and iOS. You can even find us on Amazon Prime and YouTube. Access the entire full lineup of bilingual programming, both in English and Spanish. And here's the catch. If you don't have the ability to watch the show and you just want to listen on the go, download the podcast version. Just make sure you go to nowmedia.tv and find everything you want there, from business to breaking news, lifestyle, culture, and everything in between on Now Media TV streaming services 24/7. So we're going to keep going and moving on with Noah Davis here, and we're talking about how he works with youth and family ministry, specifically people that don't know anything, maybe know a little bit, think they know everything, and then of course the healthier topic of they have a good understanding and knowledge, and we just need to keep those people moving forward. So in recapping, I want to move on to a couple of other questions about some people that are generational workers and leaders. So Noah, the youth today, I think everybody understands universally, is the next generation. They're going to be our next leaders, our next workers, and some of them are already stepping into those roles. How do you help them see the relevance of their faith and their personal development in shaping the future of their careers and not just focusing on making money, getting into the grind to just be the best in business, but to be the best holistic person, both with their personal relationships, their spiritual life, and things like that to boost the overall person?
Well, like with anything, you have to teach principles. There are underlying principles to who you are as a person. There are principles to how you run a business. There's principles to, you know, careers. And, you know, one of those core principles is that if you love what you do, then money will never really be an issue. Yeah, there's a practical side of money, and you do got to provide, you do got to make ends meet. But if you can do that in a career that you love, even if you're not making the most that you'll ever make, but it matters to you and you find fulfillment in that career, in that job, or that job in the church, I mean, not I'm talking about a career at this point, then money is really not going to be an issue. It's going to be there and it's going to be enough. But what you're going to do is going to drive you. So principles are part of it. The other side, besides teaching principles, is kind of reinforcing that with real hands-on experiences and meeting people that are doing that. We just took a trip with our youth this summer. We called it a mission tour, where we went and looked at some of the mission works here in the United States that we support. And there are some really incredible individuals who are, they're not preachers, they're not youth ministers. They're just people that wanted to use their gifts for the church, but maybe in a slightly different way. And so we have scientists, we got people with PhDs, we've got people who worked in the grocery industry for decades. We've got people who were teachers who wanted to transition into something a little different. And they're taking all of those skills and they're using it in a way that they can use their faith. They can make an impact in churches and in communities. And our kids got to see that and talk to them and interview them. And then we kind of turned the question back to some of our kids and like, okay, now think about what you're going to do. How are you going to incorporate your faith? How are you going to incorporate your skills and make that beautiful blend and make a difference in your communities and the churches that you're going to be a part of? And so the principles are kind of the foundation. But then they've got to see how other people are doing that, yeah. How they could actually make an impact with their faith and their career.
I love that. I love that there's a focus on the principles of, and here's one thing I believe. I believe that we oftentimes, both in church and in business, try to treat the symptoms of what's going on and not the core. And what you're saying is teach the principles in the beginning and the core is solid, and the symptoms either won't pop up, or if they do, they'll be much easier to treat because you just default back to those core principles. And then you get that exposure of saying, hey, look, these people are highly successful and they did not just pursue higher education, higher skill sets, and more money. You know, that stuff came along with the passion. And it just makes me think that if you're truly passionate about what you do, your money is only consequential as far as you need to have a roof over your head and feed yourself. But really, if you're passionate, even in a very low income performing industry, money will come with true passion. Like think about, generally, preachers are not the richest people. You know, there are some exceptions to the rule at mega churches and whatnot. But generally, you could have a humble preacher making ends meet to serve his local congregation. But if he's passionate about preaching and teaching and bringing people, some visitor is going to see him and say, hey, preacher, can we pay you a couple of few grand to come put on a lectureship series or something like that? And there will be actually be a money opportunity just for being passionate about a preacher or a youth and family event, something like that. So guys, focus on your core principles, focus on your passions, and God will provide. The money will take care of itself. So
absolutely.
Very, very cool stuff. So let's talk about people that maybe they're a little disconnected from that, right? Especially youth and young people, they might feel disconnected and skeptical in general about authority and leadership. They see the news just like we see the news. I've been around longer than you. You've been around longer than them, so we're used to it. But these young 13, 17, 21-year-olds, this is all brand new. I can't trust anybody, right? So how do we get them to trust the spiritual leadership, trust the guidance and the mentoring that they're getting, and not just be skeptical about everybody?
Yeah, it takes time. It's a process. I've been doing what I do for just 3 years, which, you know, in some ways feels like a long time, and in other ways is nothing. But each year that I go and I'm building those relationships with students and the families that I get to work with, that trust deepens each year. And so you can't fix skepticism and this, you know, almost paranoia just overnight. It's going to take time. And part of that is it takes sacrifice. It takes sacrifice to be there when you probably aren't expected to be there, or to show up when you really shouldn't have shown up, or to do something that nobody's ever done for them before. And of course, in a ministerial role, that involves a lot of life events. Could be tragic, could be celebrations, whatever. Yeah. In business roles, actually, it's pretty similar. I mean, as a boss, being there for somebody who just went through it and saying, hey, don't come in today. And it's like, but you know, my PTO and time off, and I don't, you know, no, you need today. Or, you know, a funeral when you had maybe an important meeting or something, and you show up for a funeral of one of your employees, you know, relatives or something. Just being there, and over time, those small sacrifices and small decisions, they compound, and they, what they do is they grow into trust, and they grow into something that's far, far greater than the little decisions and sacrifices along the way. And that leads to the people that you're trying to influence, particularly your younger generations, starting to admire you, starting to respect you, starting to form a relationship. And that goes a long, long way to them, you impacting, you know, the people they become, and getting to help them grow into somebody that's better than they were when you started.
And I would say they would start to model your behavior too, in addition to
that. Yeah, I mean,
you know, so that's when you start seeing a real impact, and it's like, whoa, those people are starting to do the same things I do. But I want the audience to also, I'm gonna echo something you said. I want them to hear it again. Skepticism cannot be solved overnight, right? And then a caveat, very summary statement was, you need to be there. And be there at times when they did not expect you to be there. And man, those were some powerful statements I wanted to draw. Well, let me ask you, we got time for one, maybe two more questions, but I want to talk about developing a skill set, but more so a mindset of perseverance and some resilience into young people. They've not experienced a lot in life. They've not had a whole lot of grind to develop their character through. So how do you coach, teach, or provide a skill set for them to be persevering, both in spiritual and in practical demonstrations through their life, whether it's their communities, their workplaces, or their spiritual growth and frustrations?
Personally, I like to be the cause of their struggle in my coaching and helping them prepare to overcome struggle, because it's a more controlled environment.
Yeah.
So there was one summer that I really wanted some of our youth to lead just a short, like 5-minute talk about the Bible, their faith, something. And so I made it voluntary, because I just wanted to see who would step up, and very few stepped up. And I get it. That's hard for a lot of kids to do, to just talk in public. So the next summer, I didn't make it an option. I kind of just told people that you're going to do this.
You're doing.
And there was some resistance to that. But what ended up happening is, when I challenged them to do that, and I almost said, I need you to do this. Like, you're part of the team. I need you to do this for the rest of the group. They actually rose to the challenge and overcame it and did well with it. And so that was a controlled environment. You know, had that not gone so well for them, that's okay. I could have mitigated the risks and the fallout with that. Of course, when you get out into the real world, that's not always the case. You don't have that safety net. And so I like being the cause of their almost their struggles and the things that they have to go through, so that I can help them. Okay, so here's what you did, and it didn't work, and here's why. Here's what you should have done, or here's what you did and it worked, and that was great. Let's build on that. And that really helps, one, get them more comfortable being uncomfortable, but also helps them learn how to do that when it's the real world, and
that's
when there's not a safety net to fall back on.
So let me
and
ask
when
you
the
this
risks
question.
Are a little bit more real.
So you would say that the goal almost is to fail in practice so that you can have success in the real world. Was that a fair summary assessment?
There's a lot to be learned from failure. Yeah.
That's I teach a lot of my kids in wrestling. Sometimes I say, hey, let's get in that practice room and let's fail today. Let's fail today and work out all those kinks and mistakes so that we're smooth operators on the mat. Hey, let's do it. Let's fail in the conference room and the admin meeting so that we don't fail in front of the client in the big board meeting. You know, so Noah, we're reaching the end of this time slot, but people are going to want to get more of your wisdom. They might even want to talk to you about some of these things you said, or they may just want to discover the church and talk about Jesus. How would they get a hold of you and find Noah Davis or the Central Church of Christ?
Yeah, you can go to our website, centralpaducah.org. It's got all kinds of stuff on there about what we do as a church family. It's got ways to contact us, more about the ministers who work here. You can also reach out to me at my email, noahmilesdavis@gmail.com. I'm always down to answer questions, to connect with you. And just help in any way that I can. So
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And for everyone else, you sit tight. We'll be back with more Pivotal Change in just a moment. Welcome back to the show. You've reached the halfway point, but we are far from done with this episode of Pivotal Change. We're bringing back a familiar face. We're bringing Wayne M. Shelton, CPA. He is a trusted advisor to hundreds, thousands of people all across the country. He's been a CPA or in the accounting world for over 50 years. And he is one of the owners and partners, and he is the founder of Shelton & Associates CPAs in Paducah, Kentucky. He's been all over the country teaching other accounting firms, speaking on the national scale, and developing content and material to help people transform not only their businesses, but also their accounting firms, so that they can also transform all of the businesses that they touch. So Wayne, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, we've got a fun episode going so far. Our prior guest was teaching us a lot about building relationships to where we can then teach and lead people. And we have a really good opportunity now because we have the big, beautiful bill that was just recently passed, and there's a lot of teaching opportunities. So I kind of want to have a kind of a two-sided coin for this. One, I want you to actually teach our audience about what is in this bill and how it may impact their businesses and in some cases their personal lives, but also teach people, like, how do you teach this as you go along? So let's start off with one of the opening topics. Wayne, you tell us, what is one of the most important things we need to know that is in this bill that everyday Americans and business owners might be facing?
You know, there are a lot of different things, and I'll make a caveat at the very first. There are going to be a lot of regulations that come down the pike over all of this. So we don't know everything right now. We know a fair amount, but there will be some defining legislation that will come down. It's actually going to be from the IRS probably.
Right.
But that'll happen over the next 6 months probably. So, but we do have some good parameters, at least is what some of the things that are going to be discussed in the bill or that are passed in the bill. So I don't know whether there's any one. Well, probably there is one single one that is going to be better for business than anything else, and that's the making permanent the depreciation at 100% for the special depreciation election. So that is a huge deal. And, you know, it had gone down to 40%. So you could take 40% depreciation on an asset.
But Wayne, now, explain to us, give us a 20-second rundown, because some people may just be getting into business. They may have been doing it for years. Just real quick, what is depreciation? Tell us about how those assets work, and then tell us the impact of this bill real quick.
Sure. Okay. Depreciation is where you take an asset that is a capital asset, like a vehicle, a building, a large piece of equipment, usually something over $1,000, $2,000, something like that. And it's a way to actually write that off for business purposes. And typically you have to, the way it used to be before the first Trump law, is you would just spread that over like 5 to 7 to 10 years, depending, could be as long as 39 years, depending on the type of property. So what this new bill does on everything that's 3, 5, 7, 10, and 15 years, you can take special election of depreciation where you can write now 100% of the cost of a asset off in the first year. That's a huge deal. And for a lot of people that are in business that have a lot of equipment, it's gonna be a huge deal.
Gotcha. So that accelerated depreciation can drastically reduce my overall income and therefore my tax bill at the end of the year if I elect this special accelerated depreciation.
Absolutely right.
And now, yes. And now that's permanent. That's awesome.
It's permanent. Then you know, it was phasing out. That, and it's really kind of weird. I've never seen a bill that had so many different implementation dates. And some things are permanent. Some things are temporary. It's kind of a weird thing. It's yeah. I've never seen it quite like this. But if you want me to, I'll go down through some of the major provisions.
Yeah, tell us another one.
I know.
Definitely.
Perfect. Okay, The tax rates basically stayed the same, which is good. They did not go up. The standard deduction did go up. It went up for a married couple to $31,500, and those changes will be in effect for 2025. So that's good. Some of the
Nice.
changes aren't in effect for 25. Let me go back to that depreciation thing. It's for any asset that was purchased after January 19th, 2025. Basically, the day Trump was put into office is when it counts. I had a guy come in the other day. He bought a truck on January the 3rd. He will only get 40%
Oh
of the
boy.
depreciation. If he had bought it on the 20th, it would have been 100%. So that's a big
Yeah.
deal. Okay, one of the other things that's going to happen, I'm just going to go through these things fairly quickly just to give you
Sure.
the kind of a flavor. If you'll notice, in itemized deductions, they had capped everybody off at $10,000. You might have had $50,000 of property tax or some kind of other taxes that are deductible, but they would only let you deduct 10. Okay, they're changing that to 40 for the year. Let me see, in 2026, it'll be 40,400. So it is in effect for 2025. So
Nice.
you'll get $40,000. That will affect a whole lot of people, particularly people that have rental property. Okay. Personal exemptions, they have made that for seniors. This is personal exemptions for seniors. They wanted to make Social Security not taxable, but the way they wound up doing it, they did it on a temporary basis. It's good for 25 through 28, and basically you get a $6,000 temporary deduction for people 65 and over. That is to offset the Social Security. It does phase out if you make $400,000 on a joint return. So that one is something you just have to keep an eye on. Child tax credit has gone up to $2,200.
Very cool.
The QBI deduction. The QBI deduction is something that's fairly technical. Basically, it says if you have, say, for example, you made $100,000 last year, if certain things are met, 20% of that net profit is not
Correct.
taxable.
And
And that's a big deal.
QBID, that's qualified business income deduction, is the QBI
Correct.
deduction. So
Yeah,
that, like I
that's
said,
right.
it's a little bit of a juggling act, multiple factors in there, but the bottom line is if you trigger those factors, you can get up to 20% of that taxable income is no longer taxable.
Correct. And that's a
Perfect,
big
okay.
deal. That is now made permanent. So that one is a good one that's permanent. The estate and gift tax exemption, which has been played with over the last
Oh
10
boy.
years, has finally gotten permanently increased to $15 million per person. Very good thing. It's good
So
for estate taxes and that
explain
type
what
thing.
that means in an estate tax. How would I get myself in a position to have to pay estate tax, and why is 15 million so important?
Well, it used to be $1 million. So if you had an estate worth more than $1 million, you were going to pay tax on that and potentially a lot of tax. So the
Correct.
fact that they raised it up to $15 million, big deal. That will cover most people. Most people
So
won't have to worry about it.
for the layman out there, if I had a hardworking father that I'm in my older age, my father ends up passing away and the estate comes to me and he had $3 million in all of his retirement accounts and I'm going to inherit this $3 million. I used to get $1 million non-taxable, but then I was going to have to pay tax on $2 million, right?
Right.
And then now I get up to $15 million where I don't pay taxes on estate. So only the uber rich basically have to worry about that estate tax now.
Correct. Correct.
Awesome. That helps the
So
American people.
that's it. It's a very good thing. It's a very good thing. Let me see. I'm just going to go down through some of the big ones. It's interesting. We have a few people that gamble and that have losses. And the way the law used to be, you could offset your winnings against your income. I mean, against your losses. But you could not deduct losses in excess of your winnings. Now you can only deduct 90% of your losses, which means that 10% of your earnings are going to be taxable no matter what. This is something the people that are in this category are going to have to watch very closely, or they're going to wind up paying a lot of tax. So that's something to be just, we'll see how that works out. Okay, two of the big deals, and we've talked about this, and Trump has been talking about this, is no tax on tips and no tax on overtime. Interestingly enough, both of those are temporary provisions. They go up through 25 through 28 on both of these. And rather than dealing with this during the year and not withholding tax on bonuses and tips, they're going to continue to do it just like they've always done it and deduct those withholdings, and you get a credit at the end of the year. That's the way that's going to work. That's, you know, that's okay. It's $25,000 for qualified tips. It's $12,005 or a max of $25 on a joint return for no tip on overtimes. We'll be getting a lot of regulations down on that. Right. So that we'll have to find out a lot more about that still.
So there's more than that. That's going to be another one, again, for the universal impact. That's going to affect a lot of people. I would say the vast majority of working Americans either receive overtime or tips. So what I'm understanding, if I have, let's just play a what-if scenario, if I have a husband that works at the factory and the wife that works at a restaurant, she's bringing home tips, he's bringing home boatloads of overtime, their regular paycheck, withholdings, all of that is going to look the same. But at the end of the year, there's going to be potentially up to a $25,000 credit that goes against that on their tax return. So if people live life like normal, they're probably going to get massive refunds is the easiest way to conserve? Okay.
That's what's going to happen because they're continuing to withhold just like these credits weren't there. And it's because it's a mid-year type thing. But they are in effect for the year 25. So that's a good thing.
So it's going to be retroactive.
We'll see how that works out in 4 years.
Yep. Fair enough, fair enough. What do you got next, sir? We got time for one more before we got to cut to commercial.
One more, okay. Car loan interest.
Yeah.
For many, many years, you could not personally deduct personal vehicles, the interest on those. You can now, but there are some caveats there. The vehicles must have had their final assembly in the United States, so good luck figuring that out, and it's capped at $10,000. So you can at least deduct something. If you are a joint return and have over $200,000, it's phased out. So that is another itemized deduction that could potentially be there.
Yeah, very cool. So American-made or assembled vehicles, and then you have under $200,000, you're going to get to start personally deducting your interest that you pay on your personal vehicles. Very cool.
Yes.
We're going to go ahead and stick a pin in this conversation. We got more of the Big Beautiful Bill education and teaching moments coming right after this. Stay tuned for more Pivotal Change and more Wayne Sheldon. Welcome back to the final stretch of Pivotal Change. We've still got a lot to learn, but if you are enjoying what you're watching, guess what? You no longer have to miss a moment of Pivotal Change or any of the other shows on Now Media TV. You can watch us live or on demand anytime, anywhere. You can simply download the free Now Media TV app. You can get on Roku, iOS. You can even find us on like YouTube and Amazon Prime. So if you want to access our full lineup of bilingual programming, that's English and Spanish, or you can prefer to listen to us on the go. If you can't catch the episode and watch it, maybe you're driving or at the gym, go ahead and download the podcast. Go to nowmedia.tv and you can find all of those easy access opportunities right there. So from business to breaking news, whether it's lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, 24/7, you can find us now on Now Media TV because we are streaming whenever and we are ready wherever you are. So we're going to keep going back to these teaching moments. It's been a teaching episode, and we're with Wayne Sheldon of Sheldon Associates CPA. He is one of the experts in the field. And we've been talking about the big, beautiful bill that recently passed and a lot of the tax implications that comes with it. So we talked about depreciation to increases in all kinds of deductions. And Wayne, we're just going to keep rocking and rolling on what you're teaching the audience and then how people can figure out more about this as they've been exposed to what you're telling us today. So if you want to just go on with the next topic, I'm going to let you rock and roll, sir.
Sounds good. Let's look at child and dependent care credit. That's always a big one for people that have kids. It has gone from 35% of qualifying expenses up to 50%. That is made permanent. So that's a good thing. It's something that's permanent. Now, let me talk about another one. This is kind of a cool opportunity for people that have children. It's called the Trump accounts.
Yes.
And basically what it is an IRA that for your children. And basically when you take the money out, the money is not taxable. You can put up to $5,000 a year in. it's got some weird dates, which I find just kind of confusing to me. But it's for children born between January 1st, 25 and December 31st, 28. Now, if you've got children before then or after then, that they don't get it. I'm really not sure why, but they don't. So if children that fall in those deadlines, take advantage of this. This is a big deal. You can make your children have a lot of money when they're finally able to retire. Okay, let's talk about some business provisions.
Can we talk about that one just a little bit more? So this is one that's kind of near and dear to my heart, because one of the things I largely love to coach people on is start investing when you're young and starting investing for your kids when you're young. And this is going to be an automatic provision that you can get where it cannot be interfered with by parents and guardians. It's a complete ownership right to the child. And there's only some extreme situations of when that can be affected. But what's going to happen in the next 4 years? If you have a child in the next 4 years, which my only guess at the timeline, Wayne, is that Trump says anybody born during the Trump presidency gets this opportunity. That's all I can think of, is that these children are almost, not guaranteed, but almost guaranteed to be millionaires in retirement. So Trump is going to take 4 years, an entire little generation of kids, and make millionaires out of all of them, because they're going to follow the standard market trend. They're going to have index funds that track the standard market funds. So basically in the bad years, they get an 8% return, and some of the good years, they're going to get up to like 14% or more return on their money. And that's going to compound over their lifetime. So the really ambitious people start investing when they're like 18 and 21, and they kind of get their first job or their first career. These people are investing from day one, and they're going to have an 18-year jump on even some of the most eager investors and entrepreneurs. That one is near and dear to my heart, and I can't have more babies, unfortunately. So
it's going to be a good one. I hope a lot of people pay attention to that one.
Absolutely.
Business. We talked about depreciation, which is one of the very, very big things. They made some change in the research and development credits. Those things change almost all the time, either the research and development credits and the energy credits. You know, 1 year you might be for Windows, the next year it's for something different. So you just have to look at those things as they come up and how it might affect you.
And I'll make another quick comment on the research and development, Wayne. So R&D credits have been there for a long time, and they're a super viable credit that people in the right industry should absolutely be tapping their accountants on the shoulders and using these credits. They became even more popular after the whole ERTC thing came through. So everybody got a taste of the ERTC and said, what other credits are out there? R&D became super popular for people to look into and chase after. R&D is a different layer of complication than what ERTC was. There's baseline years and there's adjustment years and things like that. So it's not just something where you fill out your 941s, check a box, and get money. You have to substantiate things, have an entire year of base. So talk with an expert and a professional on that one, because they just made changes to that too. So the forms, the conditions, the terms are going to change. So even people doing the R&D now can't do it the same way next year that they did last year.
There's going to be a lot of training that has to come into effect with all these things. And that's why, in my opinion, you need to be working closely with your tax preparer, your accountant. Hopefully it's not just a tax preparer.
Yeah.
It's somebody that helps you work through the years and will help you work through this tax bill, because there's a lot to it. I'm just hitting the high spots. And there'll be a lot more coming down the pike about this. Let me see. Some other things that are of interest. I'm trying to get the big ones. Let me see. There's a change in spaceports. I don't think that affects many people that I know of. Let me see. There's some stuff. There's international provisions. A lot of those we probably won't have much to do with. There are. There's an interesting one. I don't know the details. They've not given it yet that I've seen. But on farmland sales, and you know, farmland sales usually are pretty substantial. You're talking about big money, and you're talking about big tax usually. So there's a new section in the bill, it's called Section 1062, that allows income tax resulting from the sale of farmland to a qualified farmer to be paid in four annual installments. Yeah. That's a big deal, real big deal. We don't know how that's going to be implemented, but we know it will be. There's also, let me
So
see some
Wayne,
of the
let me
other.
ask that one. So traditionally, farmers carrying this huge asset called land, and they make the sale of not just the farming operations, the structures, the equipment, but the land as well. Farmers, if they decide to sell out, generally make an incredible profit, and they get absolutely punched in the gut by the IRS for that major profit that they are not expecting. And this is basically spreading out the damage over 4 years, reducing the total income impact and lowering taxes.
We think it says four period payments. It says annual installments, so that would have make it appear that it was over 4 years. That's a big deal because you
Big
can let
deal.
that money sit there and earn interest, for 3, 4 years. That's a very good thing. So that's going to be a big one.
Excellent. So my big question is, out of all of these things, and I know we just covered some of the highlights that affect the largest of the population, except for the spaceports, obviously everyone has a spaceport. But the big part of this question is, what do we do with this information? Again, you give us highlights. Do we just go talk to our accountant? Do we need specifically an advisor or an expert of some kind? And then how does that get implemented into our current working structure of our businesses and our lives?
I tell you what's the unfortunate part is I think there are a lot of people that are just going to assume that all these things will just happen. And some of them will happen, but without proper planning, some of them will not happen. So it's going to, in my opinion, it is more important now than ever before because of all the changes that have happened for you to have a someone that you work with on a regular basis, not just a tax factory type person that comes in, does your tax return, says, I'll see you again next year, have a good year. That is not what you need now. You need to be working very closely with somebody that can tell you how to implement these changes and make sure that you are as tax efficient as possible. And I'll just tell you, we get a lot of new clients. We get probably two or three a week. No one that we see is tax efficient or even close. So there's just a lot of money being paid that doesn't have to be paid.
Gotcha. And so we even have existing clients that have been as tax efficient as possible because they've been with a firm like yours that does planning and consultation for 3, 4, 5 years, being advised. But now, guess what? The IRS has moved the ball, right? There's been a new law
Absolutely.
change and somebody else has moved the ball. So now they have new opportunities, but it's also going to cost expertise research on all of these people all over the country trying to do it. They're going to have to do new plans, new implementations. So even though you're likely to become even more tax efficient from the new opportunities, should they also be expected to pay some extra fees to those experts to get a return on their investment? Because there's a whole new opportunity for value. It's probably going to cost a couple bucks to get to the big bucks. Is that accurate?
It is. And we've tracked this, and usually when people pay us for every dollar they pay us, they usually save between $5 and $10 in tax. That's not across the board, but generally it works that way because there are just a lot of things that people don't even think about. No one's told them. And there's really they can't go to the tax code. That's just really not a good option. So they need to find a firm that does tax planning.
Like it.
And there are several around. There's not as many as there should be, but there are increasing.
Gotcha. And when you say tax planning, you of course mean somebody that examines your entire situation across all corporations, all personal endeavors, and acts an actual specific and laid out plan, not just sprinkles advice and says they do tax planning. And then the other thing that you and I have talked about is we see a lot of people going to these AI sources and trying to self-educate. And I think that's a great place for people to get a clue and to get a basic understanding. But to get an implementation model, it actually falls way short. Out of all the certification exams in the United States, the only one AI to this day still can't pass is that CPA accounting exam. So you need people for that one. Wayne, I'm going to transition over. People are probably going to want to talk to you after seeing this episode and find an advisor just like you and your firm. How do they get a hold of you? Where do they find you?
We have a website, Shelton & Associates, CPA PLLC. You can check us out at our phone number, 270-442-6688. You can email us at info@wsheltoncpa.com, and we would love to talk to you. We've done this with a lot of people, and we're going to continue to be doing that.
I love it. Wayne, thank you so much for everything that you do and for coming on the show today. And then
Certainly.
for everyone else out there, go into the world and see the change and be the change. And we'll catch you right here next time on Pivotal Change.